Welcome to SLP Nerdcast. I'm Kate.
And I'm Amy, and we appreciate you tuning in. In our podcast, we review and provide commentary on resources, literature, and we discuss issues related to the field of speech-language pathology.
You can use this podcast for ASHA CEUs. For more information about us and CEUs, go to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. SLP Nerdcast is brought to our listeners in part by listeners like you. Even small contributions keep our CEU prices low and our program ad-free. You can contribute to our website by clicking Support Our Work. You can also find permanent products, notes, and other handouts. Some items are free, others are not, but everything is always affordable. Visit our website to submit a call for papers to come on the show and present with us. Contact us anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or at info@slpnerdcast.com. We love hearing from our listeners, and we can't wait to learn what you have to teach us.
And just a quick disclaimer, the contents of this episode are not meant to replace clinical advice. SLP Nerdcast, its hosts and guests do not represent or endorse specific products or procedures mentioned during our episodes unless otherwise stated. We are not PhDs, but we do research our material. We do our best to provide a thorough review and fair representation of each topic that we tackle. With that being said, it's always likely that there's an article that we've missed or another perspective that we haven't shared. If you have something to add to the conversation, please email us. We'd love to hear from you.
We are so excited that Nina's here today.
I know.
It's going to be so great. Welcome, Nina.
Well, hi, guys. Thanks for having me back. I always love to hang out with fellow nerds.
Well, if any of our listeners haven't already listened to the first episode that we published with Nina, definitely go take a listen because we had a lot of fun.
And we learned so much and it was so thought-provoking. It was such a great time recording.
It really was.
It was a ball.
It was awesome. Thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. This is a passionate topic and we love to share with community.
Now, Nina, you're here to discuss school-age stuttering therapy, but before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I have been in the profession of speech-language pathology for years I will not name on any live podcast or ever. I have been around a while, but I've been school-based all of my career. I'm a school-based SLP that has found a passion for working with people who stutter. I am married to a guy who stutters, and I am really excited about, you know, being a part of an ally and a part of the stuttering community. And it's just a great place to be. I hope that what we share today is helpful.
I have absolutely no doubt that it will be. The last time we recorded, so seriously, listeners, if you have not listened to the first episode we did, Amy and I, who do nothing with fluency, zero, I couldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole because it's not in my scope of competence. We took away so much from this first episode. Yep. Because it is so rooted in foundational, just perspectives of clinical work. So definitely go give it a listen if you haven't. Before we get started for today's topic, I have to painfully read all of our disclosures and learning objectives. So apologies in advance. I will try and get through it as quickly as possible. Nina Reeves, financial disclosures. She is the author and co-owner of Stuttering Therapy Resources, Inc. She receives royalties and ownership interest and intellectual property. Nina Reeves, non-financial disclosures. She's a past volunteer for both National Stuttering Association and the Stuttering Foundation of America. Kate, that's me. Financial disclosures. I'm the owner and founder of Grand Bois Therapy and Consulting and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. My non-financial disclosures. I'm a member of ASHA SIG 12 and serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. I'm also a member of the Berkshire Association for Behavior Analysis and Therapy, MassABA, the Association for Behavior Analysis International, and the corresponding Speech Pathology and Applied Behavior Analysis Special Interest Group.
Amy's financial disclosures. I am an employee of a public school system and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. And for my non-financial disclosures, I am also a member of ASHA SIG 12, and I serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children.
So as I already mentioned, our previous episode was about foundational perspectives and what SLPs really need to know before they begin fluency therapy. But the learning objectives for today are focused or rooted more in the strategies. So learning objective number one, list three techniques for helping children reduce the severity and frequency of stuttering behaviors. Learning objective number two, list three techniques for helping children enhance their observable speech fluency. Learning objective number three, describe how integrating communication skills into stuttering therapy can enhance therapy outcomes. I know, Nina, you mentioned your business, your website, stutteringtherapyresources.com, and being the generous and incredible human being that you are, Nina has offered 10% off of resources on her website using the code SLPNERD. So that's all caps, SLPNERD. And that code is valid through the end of this year, which is 2021. So the code expires 12/31/21. And the website again is www.stutteringtherapyresources.com. I know this sounds like a commercial, but like seriously, I've been on your website and it's so full of stuff. It really, and I don't do fluency. So this is a non-biased perspective. It is just full and full and full of resources.
Well, and I wonder if before we start, you could actually just give us a little bit, because it's an auditory modality, just give our listeners a little bit of information about what they might find on your website.
Oh, that, thanks for that. Absolutely. Here's the, you know, the very brief overview. First of all, I want to make sure that everybody knows that we not only have clinical guides for both early childhood and school age stuttering, but we have the parent booklets that go with each of those, because we know that it's important to bring parents into the world of stuttering without being so scared. And of course they are when they first move into this with their child. We definitely feel that it's important that we work on minimizing bullying with children who stutter. So we have an entire set of books for that. Our assessment, Scott Yaris is my co-owner with me, and he's co-author, but the OASIS has been around for quite a while. That's his baby. And that's the overall assessment of the speaker's experience of stuttering. And as we say in my school districts, if the child is over 7 years old, don't bring me an assessment without the OASIS, because it's a really important part of knowing how stuttering impacts that person, not just the listener's experience of it, but the speaker's experience of it. And then for sure, don't forget that we have so many free resources. We have an entire page landing for blogs, for practical tip handouts, for videos that we have on our YouTube channel that help clinicians and families understand more about stuttering.
I wasn't kidding. See, there's so much stuff on your website, and a lot of it is free. So if you are listening to this episode and you're just getting your feet wet in the stuttering world, or if you are seeking a piece of information that's more specific, it's a great place to start. So cruise on over there, code SLPNERD, because nerds are awesome. All right, moving on and into the meat of our episode. I think we're ready to just launch right into our learning objectives. Tell us everything you know. No pressure.
Well, it's fun because we wanted to go into a lot of this in our last episode, but the foundational information, you know, needed to be there in order to get towards these techniques. And so I'll kind of start by saying we're going to go over these strategies because people get very confused by these. There's so much, and I'm doing air quotes right now, stuff out there about stuttering. And I could say that some of it is, you know, I'm signing right now the word that I won't say out loud, but some of it's just not good. And some of it, you know, I'll just tell you, I signed C-R-A-P. It's crap. And so
you can say crap here. I'll give you a green card. It's fine.
Yes. Sometimes I just do it in sign language because it's just so fun.
I need to become more fluent in sign for that exact purpose.
C-R-A-P. And so I know that that sounds very, you know, poo-poo of me, but I have to say that because stuttering is such a misunderstood disorder across the board, it can be very misunderstood when speech language pathologists, especially because we know that most speech language pathologists do not feel like they got adequate training, adequate experience, They don't feel comfortable, confident, or competent, the three C's that I always talk about, in this area. And some do, but many don't. And so they go on about, as I would, searching for something because mm-hmm. they want to help kids who stutter and they want to do well in this. And so sometimes anything is better than nothing, but we have to become savvy consumers of what's out there.
And I think that that's true for our field as a whole. I think that, again, back to our last conversation, that's something that's true in stuttering, but that's also just true in speech language pathology. Be a savvy mm-hmm. consumer.
Yep. And so with that being said, we have to know that the strategies that we see online or Google, you know, it's important that we understand that if you don't know where that came from, if you don't know if that strategy has evidence-based practice or doesn't have current evidence-based practice, because there's a lot of old stuff out there that I'd like to see us get rid of and stop doing. So just because it was popular in the 70s does not mean it's still a good idea. So is there some information about it still going on? Like Van Riper? Yes, there are still things being done, you know, that Van Riperin type of thing. There's a lot of really good information out there, but we have to just know where it came from, how old, if is it still valid? Is it valid at all? So that's my segue into talking about the fact that the strategies I'm going to talk about tonight are evidence-based. I want us to see these for the help that they can give to some people who stutter to help them become, and as we talked about before, effective communicators. With stutters, without stutters, there isn't a strategy I'm going to talk about tonight that is geared for fluent speech. I can't say that with deep enough regard, is that when we introduce any strategy to any child who stutters or person who stutters, if the intent is perceived as I've got to do this so I can be fluent, we're already behind the eight ball. I mean, we're already going down the rabbit hole of I'm supposed to change my neurology now right. and rewire my brain because stuttering is a neurologically based disorder. And I'm supposed to attain something that for a person who stutters is asking them to be fluent when they are a person who is not going to always be fluent. And so
That was one of my big takeaways from our last conversation. And I think, you know, in our last conversation, it was very focused around, you know, the fundamental philosophies that you need to carry into therapy. But I think looking at that through that same lens at the different strategies that you choose is a really interesting sort of twist because, you know, not knowing anything about this, but, you know, you always have a handful of interventions that you can choose from. How do you decide? Especially if, you know, they're sort of confusing. I think looking at it through that lens is really interesting.
Yeah, I just, I don't know if your listeners follow us on social media, but I did a post a while back, just more recently, about the microaggressions of stuttering. And then I, you know, Scott just followed up with one about it's never about breathing, because we always get requests about, can you tell me how to do the strategy of breathing? We're like, it's not one. So you're going to hear some things from me now that are going to be helpful. And I'm also going to give you some ideas about what not to be doing any longer, because I think if I empty your bucket, I have to fill it back up.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So if I'm going to, I guess I'll start with emptying things you're not going to hear me talk about, right?
Yeah. Let's start there.
You're not going to hear me talk about slow down. I'm not going to say those words to children who stutter pretty much ever. You're not going to hear me talk about take a deep breath or full breath or breathe. Let me talk about the clavicular versus the diaphragmatic, blah, 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 blah. Not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about tapping or any kind of weird thing that people want kids who stutter to do, because I consider that fluency at all cost. Okay. And what if that doesn't work and I get into a stutter? What do I do now? I can't tap it out or push it through, or I'm really confused as a kid who stutter when people tell me to do things that don't help in the long term. Mm-hmm. Then I feel like therapy doesn't work. I feel like strategies don't work. I kind of throw everything out after a while because I'm still stuttering and you kind of promised me some fluency. And so the idea is to make a balance between strategies that can help, less tension. Okay. Less struggle, less tension. I don't have to avoid that word because if I get into a stutter, I'll have some ways to move through it in an easier way. But it's okay for me to stutter. So I'm going to approach that word no matter what. And then I'm going to learn what to do to make it feel less effortful for me. So the strategies are for less struggle, less tension, less effort. And we will talk about the strategies that increase, they can enhance fluency. See, fluency is not a bad word. Okay. I'm always talking about the idea that fluency is not the problem. The expectation of fluency is the problem. Okay. That idea of this arbitrary number of I have to be this much percent fluent, when we talked last time, the fact that fluency does not exist. Perfect fluency does not exist. We are not fluent. We're not fluent. Mm-hmm. Everybody's disfluent. Nobody is fluent and some people stutter. We have a whole section of that in our book. Okay. It's not everybody stutters. So don't say that because that's not true. Okay. This is a neurologically based physical motor manifestation of a disorder in communication for some people. And so we want to look at all of that and how that can impact the child. And when we come to the strategies, which are a part of therapy, but not the whole of therapy, then we want to break down those strategies into some categories that we can frame up for ourselves and for our students so they know why we're doing what we're doing.
I think that's going to be so helpful for listeners, because for me, as I'm trying to think about it, again, as somebody who doesn't work with fluency and with stuttering, but I do write goals and objectives, right? And I know from my goals and objectives, education that needs to be measurable. So I can see where people might get a bit confused and think like, well, if the expectation and the goal is this, this is how I'm going to write it. And so I think that helping people to shift not only their perception of what the priority is, but also think about how to translate that clinically into a goal that remains still measurable and objective, something that we can step back and say, oh yes, we've made progress toward this, I think is going to be really helpful, because it can be harder to wrap your head around what that goal looks like.
Completely. And that's always the question I get asked when I start talking about the strategy not for fluent speech. Everybody's like, well, then how do I write my goal? And that's because somewhere along the line, someone is still teaching clinicians to write goals for fluent speech, percents of, non-stuttered speech or percents of fluency. And all I can say, and I probably said this before, but I'll say it again. All I can say is that a goal for a percent of stuttered speech or fluent speech, especially in a school-based world, is a due process waiting to happen.
Say that again, Nina.
It's a due process waiting to happen. Why, you may ask? Because the only consistent thing about stuttering is that it's inconsistent. Stuttering varies moment to moment, person to person, situation to situation. Stuttering is variable. So if you have a goal written for fluent speech, 90%, these arbitrary, they're also arbitrary. And I just want us to say, like, okay, so the child's going to be 90% fluent in the therapy room with this many clinician cues with this, in this structured speech setting. Great. Over three settings, you know, sessions of data probing. Yes. And so you get your three sessions of data probing, and one day the kid walks in and he's getting his fluency, right, at 85%. So you suck or he sucks. Somebody sucks, right? And then, oh, can I say that?
Oh, yes, you can say that. That's fine.
And so somebody's to blame for that, right? And then the next time the kid comes in, he's more than 90% fluent. Yay, your therapy is working. What? Really? What if the child was 90% fluent in that data probe because he avoided all the words he thought he was going to stutter on? Yay. Therapy's working. Not at all.
It's bad goal. It's
bad goal. Bad goal. Not bad person who wrote bad goal.
No. I've written bad goals. It's all right. Doesn't make me a horrible person. Don't hit me with a stick, but
nobody's hitting anybody who sucks with a stick. No. That's not going to happen today on my watch.
So we're remote, so we actually can't even hit each other if we wanted to.
We have to stay focused.
Social distance. So I say that with love, because I really want, I'm older than most of the people listening to this, and I don't have as much time left on the planet as I want. So just stop doing it. Like, I don't have time to be like, oh, could you consider something else? I just want us to stop it. Because you guys are all laughing, I'm hoping, right now in your cars or wherever you're listening to this and going, I knew I didn't want to write that goal, but I didn't know what else to write.
Right.
Yes. My professor said to, or my, you know, adjunct instructor said to, or the person that did the, you know, the class that was three different classes rolled into one and I got 2 weeks of stuttering, told me to. Here's the deal. You can let yourself up off the mat, because the thing that also happens is that we don't feel successful because the child is still stuttering, and we've got to get over the idea that we're going to cure kids who stutter school age, right? We're not curing stuttering, but we are helping that child communicate comfortably, confidently, you know, and with a little less effort. And when you strive to be fluent, that's effort. For a person who doesn't have the neurology that's going to allow that.
So how do you do that? Mm-hmm. I know that's like a really, I don't know that it's a dumb, it's not a dumb question. It's an obvious question. So we know, looking through this lens, that you're, you know, that looking through that lens of not trying to make, you know, the fluency is not a bad word kind of feeling.
Yeah.
What strategies does that leave on the table?
All of them.
Okay.
I hear what your question is. Let me back up. All of the ones that are evidence-based, current evidence-based, and are not creating so much effort for the person who stutters to be able to do. Okay. And so if it's so artificial and sounds weird and feels weird to the kid who stutters, even after a while, okay, then let's think, is this where we're supposed to be going? Yeah. And I think the strategies, there are fluency enhancing strategies, easy onset, light articulatory contact, pausing and phrasing. These are fine, right? They're evidence-based. They've been around. We understand why we're doing what we're doing with those, as long as they're presented with the intent of easing the flow instead of trying to be a percentage fluent.
Because
semantics
instead of,
matters.
And I this was why I loved our other conversation so much, because accidentally conveying the idea that stuttering is bad, that disfluency is bad, is giving your client or giving the individual who is, you know, already struggling with disfluency, that's why they're there to see you, it's giving the wrong message. So I feel like through that lens, nothing positive is going to come of that. That's not a good foundation for moving forward in therapy.
It's really hard for a kiddo who stutters to show up in a room and be him or herself, to be themselves. in a world where they feel like every time they stutter, which is out of their control, that they have to go back and fix it. Because they've made a mistake, they've messed up, they haven't practiced enough, all of these unintended microaggressive messages that blew up the internet when we posted it. It was like, oh my gosh, you know? And the idea is this: when you come at anything, any kind of communication with a person who stutters, that they are accepted exactly the way they are, stutters and all, right? Exactly for who they are. And if they choose to want to have some help in feeling more comfortable, confident, and easier in their communication, then we can work on some things. Yes? There's a whole bunch of things we work on. Strategies are just part of it. But that's what we're going to talk about tonight, because I'm not going to leave here until we talk about strategies, because we kind of blew through it last time and we keep promising. And so we're going to do that.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, because when you move into this, if the intent of even strategies is to help us feel more comfortable, confident, and easy in our communication, then that's not a bad message. That's the message of you are who you are. You can stutter in this room and I'm not going to make you go back and correct it. Okay. If you're feeling tension and you want to try to ease up that tension, then I got some game. Yeah. I've got some things we can work on, but it's not to, air quote again, fix the stutter. It's to ease the struggle and the tension. And it's, if we're okay to stutter, then we have to be okay to stutter all of it, not just 10% of it. Or some arbitrary number, yes? And so if a child is reacting and pushing and avoiding, then that's not going to make them comfortable with communication. So I'm going to start us off actually with the idea of easing out strategies. So these are the stuttering, the old word was stuttering modification. It's very Van Riperen. And the idea here is, how do I move through a moment of stuttering in an easier way? The reason I'm going to start with this today is because in this moment, we have to realize that I think if SLPs have any kind of feel of strategies, they tend to have a better feel for the fluency shaping ones, the enhancing fluency ones, the easy onset, the light contact. I feel like they feel more comfortable with those. So I'm going to make you uncomfortable first. we can get to the more comfortable stuff in a minute. But if a child is stuttering, if they're already in a stutter, an easy onset does them absolutely no good. Let me say that again. If the child is already in a stutter, easy onset is nothing to them. I'm stuck already. Onset means start. I'm started and I'm stuck. Okay. So how do I, you know, if I'm stuck and I'm a kid who stutters and I don't know what else to do, I'm going to stop and start over and hope for the best. I'm trying to get lucky on the getting it out, right? I'm going to push. I want to go. And that pushing makes more tension. So we'd like to try something else. Okay, but it's automatic. If I don't know what else to do, I'm going to push harder, or I'm just going to go, never mind. Or I'm going to go, no, we want to go, which is changing the word. And that means I'm not being authentic in my communication. I'm just trying to find a way out of this stutter in any way I can, and usually not in a way that's going to help me long term. So if we're going to try to help kids move through stutters in an easier way, we've got to be okay to stutter. Okay. You've got to be able to get on the stutter in order to handle the stutter. And so there are many ways to handle stuttering. I like, you know, good old clean stuttering, let the stutter happen. Right. And don't try to avoid it. So I love Vivian Siskin and her avoidance reduction therapy and all of those kinds of things. Parts of that show up in my therapy all the time. Okay. One of my kids now calls it the honest stutter. That's my honest stutter. I love that. He's like, we're trying not to load the crap on it, the push, the avoid, the stop and start over, the all of the other things. There's my honest stutter and I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So that's very desensitizing and deauthalizing, as Bill Murphy would have said. And so we wanna know that it's okay to stutter enough to get on the stutter. And now if I'm in the stutter, how do I move through it? Okay. Not get out of it, but move through it. So I'm going to go through those strategies so as not to confuse. Those strategies include cancellation. If you've ever heard about cancellations, they are not stopping and starting over. They look like stopping and starting over to the untrained eye. But what it is a step-by-step process catching a stutter after it's occurred. So Ben Riper, in his infinite wisdom, gave us strategies to handle a stutter before, during, and after it has occurred. Okay. To handle the tension, not fix the stutter. Handle the tension, not fix the stutter. Not go back and be fluent. So in a cancellation, it's about, if I stutter like, I want to go with you. That's a cancellation. It sounded like I stopped and started over on this audio tape, but in there, I caught the stutter. That's a skill. I figured out where I was tight, another foundational skill that we write chapters about. I figured out where I was tight, a little identification, right? From midvas, all of those things that we learned in grad school. And then I eased up the tension, okay? I know the difference in my proprioceptive awareness. I know the difference between a tight and a loose muscle in my speech anatomy. I have to know speech anatomy. I know the tight and loose muscle. Now I can ease out that tension and start again in an easier way. So even though it looked like I started over, to an untrained eye, I did like four steps there. And I took long enough, by the way, paused long enough, didn't rush it, to handle that stutter in an easier way. Okay. So I'm not carrying that much tension into my next words. I didn't just kind of go through the word and say as many words as I could possibly get, which is very increasing in tension. So I stopped and I'm like, okay, let me handle that tension. And then I can ease back in, and it doesn't have to be fluent. You know, if the child can ease back in and there's no tension there, fine. But that's not the intent. If they went from, I had this tight tension in my voice, in my speech machine, and I eased down the tension, even if I still stuttered on the second one, but had less tension, I have a successful cancellation. That can be very confusing to everybody involved. It takes nuance. It takes a while. It takes explanation. It takes coaching. It takes our speech pathology friends to know why they're doing what they're doing and what they are doing. And I should say, before I go on, I should say there are, Scott and I have put up a video for each one of these strategies on our free part of our website. So like, how do you teach a kid a cancellation, and how do you teach? And we're actually going to do a series. Please don't hold me to this right now, but we're going to do a series of videos for children to watch.
Oh, that's awesome.
In kid language.
That's well, fantastic. Because I'm so glad you said that, because as you were speaking, I was trying, like I had all of these questions pop up, like, all right, that's a lot of things. Is there an order that you teach it in? Like, do you, you know, I mean, you have to address having a basic awareness of your speech mechanism, and depending on the age of your client and their interest level, like, what does that look like? So I'm excited to hear that that's a resource that's available to me and to our listeners.
Exactly. And in those in those videos, there are two videos to watch first. It's called Introduction and Foundations, because we don't want to launch into strategies without foundations. That's why strategies, quote unquote, don't work for kids, and why they quit therapy and why SLPs feel like they don't do this well, is because if the child doesn't have the basic knowledge and skills, which we write chapters about, and we're doing an activity book about, and we're going to, you know, if they don't know their speech anatomy, if they don't know tight and loose, if they don't know how to catch a stutter, even a fake one, one in your voice and one in my voice, if they don't have a lot of that going, then some of these strategies are going to be like great for therapy sessions, but not usable in the world. So yes, those resources are available.
But just to say it back to you, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I totally could be wrong. The overview of the cancellation strategy is that you need to catch that stutter, figure out where your tension is, release some of that tension, and then move on.
Yep. Start again on that word in an easier way. Yep.
And that's different from starting over, because the goal is not to just hope that you get lucky on that start over. It's like an explicit choice to try and make your tension reduced. Awesome.
You got it. You've got it, because the idea
I always, learning.
I know, it's so fun.
Good. Love it.
The cool thing about this is that, you know, when I'm with my students and with my other SLP colleagues, when I'm doing the trainings, I'm like, okay, stop and start over is stop and start over. That's two things I just did. And three, hope for the best. Okay, great. Not concrete, not at all helpful. Okay. The cancellation has steps to it that increase the opportunity and the likelihood that that student will have less tension on. And, you know, and it's like, it's so empowering. Like, who's in charge now, man? I'm more in charge. We also have to make sure our students always know, are they supposed to do that on every stutter? Do they have to go back and cancel it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, no, shake your head. No, everybody shake your head. No, drive while you're shaking your head. No, right now. Okay. Obviously that's another one of those 100% things that we are not going to expect kids to do. And some kids are not going to be great at catching their stutters yet. Okay. So this is obviously just an overview, and there's much more to learn about these, but cancellation is one of those easing out strategies. Pull out is another easing out strategy. And that is basically the same steps, but while the stutter's happening. So it's a forward moving sort of, I would like to go. Okay. Taking my time to catch it. Oh, there it is. I feel it. It's in my vocal cords, and I'm easing as I go. So that's the same steps, but not in a stop motion. There's no stop and go back. There's just being able to maybe handle a stutter as it happens. So in that pull out, it's I am in charge sometimes of my stutter as it's happening, and I can move through it easier. Then I don't have to stop and start over. I don't have to avoid. I don't have to push all the time. So it's a much easier out. And that's important for kids who are feeling stuck, who are stuttering in a way that creates struggle and tension and secondary behaviors. Secondary behaviors come because I'm pushing and reacting. And so I want to make sure that there's another option here sometimes. I'll go through two more fairly quickly, because now you know you have resources to go back and get these in a more in-depth way. Preparatory set is what Van Riper gave us for being able to handle a stutter before it gets out of control, okay? I could do 3 hours on preparatory sets. So this is a very brief overview of the idea that, first of all, not every kiddo is going to need preparatory set. So as we look at all of these strategies we're talking about today, realize I'm not giving them to you in order as a program in any way, shape, or form. You're going to figure out which kids need what, right? Based on the child that's sitting in front of you. Not every child needs every strategy, at least while you're working with them. And we don't just want to throw all of them at them and hope for the best. Okay. You got to be very diligent in your choices. If you choose the wrong strategy, you're going to know it fairly quickly. Give yourself some grace and go, oh, as long as I don't beat this kid up with the strategy that isn't working out for 6 months, I'm okay. Right. It's okay to test the waters, put your toe in, and see if the rationale for your choosing of this strategy was correct or not, and then move on. So preparatory set for, in my world, is for students who have, they really know when their stutters are coming, they can feel them proprioceptively, or they anticipate stutters. I always stutter on my name, okay? Okay, so that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's not about your name. That's about how you fear your name, right? Or whatever letter your name starts with. And so we can handle that by getting into that word in an easier way. We're still managing a stutter that's happening in your mind or happening in your body. So it's still a stuttering management strategy, but it is really a head game. It's really about the listener's experience. I'm not going to know it happened. You're going to tell me. Okay. The listener isn't going to know whether you bounced into that or stretched into that in an easier way because you were feeling it or thinking it. I'm just going to go, did that feel easier to you? And you're going to say yes or no. So there's a lot with preparatory sets that are nuanced. The last stuttering management, easing out type of strategy, really, I've always thought belongs on its own island. And that is voluntary stuttering. So even though it hangs out with the easing out strategies, the stuttering modification strategies, it's really about I'm handling my fear of stuttering by stuttering on purpose to be more open about it. But as my husband calls it, who's a guy who stutters, he says, like, I'm stuttering on my own terms right now to open up to make space for my stutter. So I'm not as freaked out. You're not as freaked out. Everybody just, you know, hang in there. I stutter sometimes, right? So I throw in these, you know, voluntary stutters as much as or as little as I need to handle the maybe speaking anxiety I'm feeling. I'm also going to throw in some honest stutters. I'd like some honest stutters to be happening too. I'm not using this as another avoidance. Like, I'll let you see my baby stutters, but I won't let you see my real ones. So see the nuance here? Mm-hmm. This is why one of my posts more recently was stuttering therapy is not easy. I'm sorry. I'm breaking it to you. Okay. If stuttering therapy were 1, 2, 3 easy, then we'd all be doing exactly that stuff and all our kids would be cured and we'd all move down the road. It's not that easy, but it's not impossible. The message tonight is the strategies are not impossible. The nuances are not impossible. We are a solidly thinking, bright, amazing set of professionals, and we can figure this out with support, with help. You know, and so I want us to know that whatever we're doing with kiddos who stutter, as long as we're being safe, that we're having a safe space for them to be who they are, we're going to be okay. And we just keep learning. And so if you've never dealt with these stuttering modification techniques, then let's, you know, go to the website. Let's find, you know, the good stuff on these. You know, we have an outline of every one of these strategies in our books. And I just want us to feel more comfortable and confident with those.
I have a question. So, yes. And this is maybe a dumb question for you because I don't know anything and that's fine. I'm comfortable with my place and my learning trajectory here. But all of the strategies that you've just described, I mean, I'm just looking at our learning objectives, thinking about our learning objectives, are really geared towards the reducing the severity and frequency of the stutter. And that's different than addressing or helping a child enhance their observing their own speech fluency. Mm-hmm. Are they totally different strategies or are they similar?
Well, all of these strategies can work together. So thank you for that. It's a great segue to talk about the fluency enhancing strategies, because there used to be in the old days, you were either a Van Riper or you were a fluency person, right? You couldn't be both. But we've come to learn that integrating these strategies can be helpful, because I want to ease into speech, which are what I'm going to do now, right? I would like a hamburger and some French fries.
Me too.
Right? It's a famous Hugo Gregory sentence that we all practiced on, right? And so it's, I'm easing in, I'm increasing my flow, but I'm not expecting perfect fluency. Okay. So I can go, I would like a hamburger. Okay. So now I'm stuck. So all of the things we just talked about will be helpful, or I could just go and some French fries, as long as, you know, on a stutter. Right. And then I'm not bad because I let that stutter out. I didn't avoid, I didn't push. I just let the stutter happen and moved through it. So the easing in and the easing out makes sense, because instead of like pushing or trying to be fluent, I am flowing easier. Easy onset. That is my easy onset. Here is my light touch. You can't see it, but you know, light touch is touching the articulators lightly when you're saying words. And then the easy onset is that bit of easy stretch. Those are ones that we learned, most of us, in our grad school programs. But I think we were taught that those were for fluency, mm-hmm. that those were so the child would not stutter. This mm-hmm. is the cultural paradigm shift we're trying to get into, is that if you use that to try to not stutter, and then you get into a stutter, then you feel like you failed.
And the observe and the skill on the part of the person who is stuttering, who is experiencing the stutter, is not only to embrace those strategies, but to be able to, I mean, there's a lot that you're talking about here, acceptance of self, autonomy, and that, you know, knowledge of the anatomy and physiology and understanding tense versus, what's the opposite of tense? Loose, not tense?
Loose.
Yeah, loose. Sure. Yeah. And then being able to having that self-awareness and teaching that level of self-awareness, I have to assume is a cornerstone of being able to implement a lot of these classic quote strategies that you're talking about that we all learned in graduate school.
Very, very important observation. I mean, we're talking about strategies tonight in this hour, because that's what you can do in an hour. But the foundational knowledge and skills is imperative. They don't have to be perfect at it. We're not going to go, oh, there was one. Oh, there was one. No, it's proprioceptive awareness, not SLPs making them aware of their stutters, right? They, let me tell you, kids who stutter can feel it. Like if they don't have the language to tell us, hey, anybody noticing the stuck part here? But they can feel it, right? And they understand at a pretty early age that nobody else is doing that stuff. So their awareness is there, their ability to talk to us about their awareness or their willingness to talk with us about their awareness is different. So when we talk about the basic knowledge and skills, when Scott and I write about it, post about it, blog about it, go on podcasts about it, it's because it is imperative to make sure that foundation is part of. You don't have to, you know, if a child wants a strategy, I'll start strategies sometimes with kiddos if that's what they, I will meet them where they are. But we will also be doing all of that basic knowledge and skills, because otherwise the strategies will last for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Their knowledge about why it helps, how they can transfer this into other places will be absolutely zero if they don't have that basic knowledge and skills.
That seems critical. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to, you know, make sure that you're focusing on that in your therapy as well as some of those traditional strategies.
Mm-hmm. And that's really why I keep saying, you know, these strategies are a part of therapy. We talked in our last episode about the ICF model, and this is the function part of the ICF model, you know, but it also helps with the reactions, and it also helps with teaching your environment. All of these things are synergistic. So it's not like they're so separate. We're going to be in therapy from cradle to grave. Please, dear God, let's not do that. Right. But this kind of thing has overlap. And while you're doing one thing, heck, when I was doing that pullout, you know, getting onto the stutter and then easing through it, I was helping myself as a person, you know, if I'm the person who stutters, I'm desensitizing, right, to the stuttered moment. And I'm also handling time pressure, trying not to rush through it. So there's a lot of synergy going on in the entirety of what we try to address in stuttering therapy. But our problem is that our profession for a long time has focused too much only on strategies and trying to get kids to be fluent. And so that's what SLPs think that they have to do only, instead of all these other things that will make the strategies so much more helpful.
And we talked a lot about those strategies for reducing the severity and the frequency of stuttering. And I know you've gone through two now that are talking about kind of enhancing some of that observable fluency. Are there any others that are things that we might think about from grad school?
Well, yes, that light contact and easy onset, which, by the way, I put together because they're always together. I may discover them with a child separately, you know, tight contact, tight, and then, you know, light, right? So we do that in comparison to the tight and loose muscles and feeling that. I do the easy onsets separately, but then we blend them together. And so the final more fluency enhancing strategy, I'm starting to feel like I need to pull out of fluency enhancing and put as an all-encompassing strategy of pausing and phrasing. You know, we don't speak in words. We speak in phrases. And it's natural to take a moment and then start again. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we wouldn't have periods and commas in reading.
Right, exactly.
And so helping a child understand pausing and phrasing, first of all, decreases the rate of communication. Notice I didn't say slows them down. So that whole slow down, take a deep breath, you can throw out because you've got pausing and phrasing, which is not relative. It, as a concept, it's a solid concept. I took my pause and I don't even have to think, breathe, pause, think, breathe, pause, think, breathe. No, pause allows air, decreases tension. Your body resets naturally. And so that is a very powerful strategy that we want all kids to learn about. So that they, you don't have to teach breathing. And by the way, the breathing blog has blown up a lot of conversation because if we don't need to teach breathing, kids who stutter don't have breath problems. Okay. They have tension problems and pushing and avoiding and, you know, taking a deep breath usually brings tension, not release. So let's not give them another thing to think about. Let's do pausing and phrasing, and all of those natural body functions will give them enough breath support, time for thinking, and the decreased tension. And pausing and freezing goes with every single strategy we just talked about, even the stuttering management ones, because once you get to sentence level, you better have some pausing going on in your hierarchy of linguistic length and complexity. Yeah. So thank you for, you know, making sure that I pulled that in, because it's a huge part of what we do with everybody. I think everyone should learn to pause more. But I will wrap up the strategies, if you don't mind, with saying we've done the easing out strategies, an overview of those. We've done the easing in strategies, a brief overview of those. All of those are to increase flow and decrease tension. And I would be remiss if I didn't say communication skills have to be pulled into all of stuttering therapy. Not every child who stutters needs communication skills, because some of them have great communication skills. But we do need to be watchful that, have they learned some of the turn taking that other kids, as they start their voice getting into the world, yeah? Do they know turn taking? Do they know eye contact? And do they know one of the most important ones, handling time pressure? Because communication time pressure is freaky.
Anybody who is feeling under pressure to communicate, that affects everybody, because they're humans, not necessarily. I mean, there's an added component there when you have a stutter, but yeah, it's a real thing.
Yes, it's a real thing right now for me, because I've got to say it, you know, and wrap this up. But I have to tell you that it's so real for people who stutter, because not because fast talking is the problem, but fast communication can exacerbate tension and anxiety. And I don't mean anxiety as stuttering is an anxiety disorder, but when I get anxious and have to talk faster and feel like I have to get it out really quick, I'm a kid who stutters, that's going to exacerbate the neurological and physiological manifestation of my fluency issue. So I want to say that if I can do anything with kids now, I've changed my therapy over the past few years. I learn every day to do new things and to make things better. I've changed my therapy. Handling time pressure used to be, you know, something we talked about, but it was, you know, later on. Now I do it first, so that students who are working with strategies don't rush the strategies either.
That's so important. That's such a good point. What's the point of having a good strategy if you don't have time to use it? That's like going to a gas station without a car. It doesn't make any sense.
I am taking my own time for talking. This is the mantra, okay? Some days I need a little extra time for talking, because I am learning how to handle my speech mechanism the way it is in any one moment. And I just need that extra time. And guess what? I deserve it. You wait.
I love that.
I got this. Yeah. Empowerment. Yes. So important.
Oh, it's so important.
So that's the three different sort of categories. Obviously, much more to talk about and learn about it with these, but I hope it takes us off of, I need, you know, 15 strategies. There aren't 15 strategies, okay? There are some solid strategies that will help kids. It's not all of what we do in therapy, but it's a part. And I just want our SLP friends and colleagues to feel that they don't have to be searching over and over and over again for something new when there's already something there.
I don't think that anybody can say anything to top that.
I agree. I'm glad that you stepped up, because...
Because I'm hoping that our listeners sort of let that float in the airwaves for a while, because, you know, empowering our clients is one of the most important things that we can do. And looking at these strategies through that lens is one of the most important things that we can do. I'm taking quite a bit away from this conversation.
I've had a lot of fun with it as well. And I hope that, you know, If anybody has questions about what we've talked about at all, you know, they can always reach out to me, you know, by email. Did I ever give the email? Nina@ninareeves.com. It's pretty easy to remember. It's my name. And I, you know, I'm happy. You know, I am not Scott Yaris. I will not answer in 32 seconds. And I still love myself. Let me just say it again. I still love me. Because I will take a while. There's a balance that I'm trying to strike in my life. I will answer you. I will not blow you off, but this is important stuff. And this is my life's work. It's our life's work. It's why we do what we do. And, we cannot tell you exactly what to do with the kid you're sitting in front of you, but we can try to help provide the support and resources. This is a community. This is what we're supposed to do with each other, is to make sure that nobody feels, you know, out there in the dark.
Yes. No one can see me like aggressively pumping my fist in the air, because that is why we are here.
Right.
And that's our whole thing. That's like our whole mission statement, is trying to make sure that there is a community for sharing knowledge outside of social media, and, you know, outside of trying to, you know, pay thousands of dollars to get to a conference. So I can't say thank you enough to you for sharing all of your knowledge with our listeners. I can vouch for Nina. She does write you back, and she is an incredibly generous and lovely human being. So if you do have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. You can also reach out to us anytime, info@slpnerdcast.com. Just as a quick wrap up, all of the resources that are available on Nina's website are in the show notes in your podcast player. There will be links to everything. There also are lots of resources and links to Nina's website on the episode page. So if you are using this podcast for ASHA CEUs, it's all right there when you go to check out. Nina, is there anything else that you want to leave our listeners with before we let you go?
I guess I want to say you can do this. SLPs can do good quality stuttering therapy in the schools, in private practice, anywhere they are. That the rapport that you have with that young child who stutters, the safe space that you make for them to be who they are, can be one of the only places where they feel comfortable. And that, above any strategy, any technique, anything that you grab off of Pinterest, is more important. And that's, they're going to remember you for that. They're not going to remember you for strategies. Guaranteed.
Just giving me all the happy feelings. Again, nothing can be said after that. So we're just going to leave it at that, I guess. We'll end on a high note. Thank you so much for joining us. You are just such a gem and a treasure, and we're so, so grateful. Again, if anyone has any questions, email us anytime. And thank you so much for joining us.